One of the great advantages of living in Israel is that when Christmas comes around, you don't even notice it. You know, it's worse. It's worse than it used to be. It's worse in Tel Aviv than it is in Yerushalayim. It's worse than, okay, you know what? I don't even know that. But, I mean, there are years it can go right by and you don't even notice it. You know what it comes up? When you get to, if you do travel overseas, and then, like, even 3 weeks before, a month before, then just suddenly you're overwhelmed by the whole, shall we say, season's greetings. And
my son took a couple of days, and I said, why are you off?
You don't notice it. Okay. But still, and this is just like, it's in my mind, just a little ironic. You will find that Jews, I mean Orthodox Jews, I mean ultra-Orthodox Jews, I mean Hasidic Jews, have been commemorating Christmas for years, and they can't let go. So that's part of what we are going to try to understand today. Okay, what I said was formulated very carefully, and you could absolutely quote me on that. It's they are far more paying attention to this than I would. And once again, the topic that I had prepared for last week, you still haven't gotten because I just changed my mind at some point yesterday and decided that you know, I had to go look on the calendar to see exactly when Christmas Eve is, and apparently it's tomorrow night. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong about that, but I think it is tomorrow night. Anyway, in rabbinic literature, and I'm going to qualify that in a moment, but in rabbinic literature, Christmas is referred to as Nittel. And the night is referred to as Nittelnacht. So the question is, why? Is this a phrase that none of you have heard?
No.
Nittelnacht. Nittelnacht, which you can certainly claim to me is Yiddish, which at least the second part of it is Yiddish. The question is what the word Nittel means, and if you go through literature. Now again, when I said rabbinic literature, I am. You recall it from some point?
Of course.
Okay. Now, when I say.
Cards,
okay, good. We'll get to the cards. When I say rabbinic literature over here, let me qualify what I'm not referring to. I'm not referring to the Gemara. I'm not referring to Midrash. I'm not referring to the Zohar. I'm not referring to anything which you can consider to be ancient. The phrase does not occur over there. It does occur in the time of the Rishonim, multiple examples of the time of Rishonim, differences of spelling. You see, I spelt it with a tet, and by the way, I could have done it with a taf. It made no difference because it's quoted both ways. Just for example, if you look at source number one, the Trumat Hadeshen, and what's interesting about the Trumat Hadeshen is the Ramah quotes this in the Shulchan Aruch, this particular thing. Whether it's in your printed editions of the Shulchan Aruch or not is another problem, because rabbinic literature is notorious for anything having to do with Christianity or Christians or the founder of Christianity do not necessarily make it to the final cut. The Trumat Hadeshen brings a question. Bekama ayarot, in a number of towns, nohagim ha-yehudim, the Jews have a custom, and now you'll notice that I did make reference to this last week, the Jews have a custom, lishloach doranot, to send presents, likomarim, to the priests, u'lishiltonim, and the people in charge, biyom shmini l'nital, on the eighth day of from Nital, the eighth day from Nital, kishemitchadshim lahem hashana, the day which they consider to be New Year's. So, what is the Trumat Hadeshen referring to over here? Very clearly, he's referring to sending gifts at the New Year. Are you permitted to do this? Is the question that he brings up. The reason he brings this up is because there is a whole discussion in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah if you're even allowed to do business with a non-Jew the day before, the day of, leading up to their holiday, because they may thank their gods, and so on. Maybe they'll be using the money for idolatry and so on and so forth, and you really shouldn't do it the day of their holiday. And therefore, it's not so surprising, the answer that he gives, that A, you can send the present. By the way, you can say, what happened to Lo Techanem? And and I'll say it again, that there may be a quid pro quo over here. But his answer is, Yira diyesh li zaher bizeh shelo yishlechu mamash ba'oto yom, eliyam kodim o yom acharav. Don't send it exactly on that day. Send it the day before, send it the day afterwards. But you do see a permissive ruling over here. And as I said, this is not our topic today. This is 13th, 14th century. And as I said, this does make it into the Shulchan Aruch. The Ramal quotes this. And the word nital is used over there. And the problem then has been, is what does the word nital mean? And you will find among the rabbis in the later times give all kinds of creative and very creative interpretations of the word nital. I mean, for example, some will claim nital refers to the one who was talui, the one who was hung or crucified, if you will, even though the rabbinic literature refers to him as being hung, so therefore nit or nital, some will say nital is the one who was taken away. He was nital. Some say that nital stands for noten tam lufgam, the one who left a bad taste in our mouth. And there are other more creative ones, but the more creative you realize, the less likely that it is. What does the word nital really mean? Exactly. Look at the back page. I gave you a dated article from the original Jewish encyclopedia. Go ahead. You can read. You probably even know the Latin, right? Judeo-German word for Christmas. By the way, how do you say Christmas in Hebrew? How do they refer to it in Hebrew? Chag Hamolad, which is not the translation of Christmas. What is the translation of? Nital. Nital, from, like prenatal, okay? Krachsmich, okay. Derived from the medieval Latin. No one here knows medieval Latin? I wasn't implying any of you were old, by the way, when I asked if you know medieval Latin. Anyway. There you go. So the word is Natale Domini. That almost sounded authentic, I don't know. But anyway. Right. So therefore, for Jews to refer to this as Natal or Nital, what they're doing is they're just taking the Latin word and Hebraicizing it, or maybe even copying the way it was pronounced in Germany. If you look at Di Natalis in French, Noel. I mean, do you recognize that? I would assume that you do. Moses Israel speaks of the custom of sending presents on the eighth day of Nital, which is called New Year. There you have the exact citation, but now you know where he got it from because you saw the earlier source. It was also customary among Jews to play cards on Nital night. You remember the cards, you said, right?
I remember hearing
about it.
I never witnessed it.
Which was explained as being done in opposition to the solemn celebration of the evening by Christians, while really it was, merely a survival of the old German custom of merrymaking at that festival. So therefore, those who think that they're following a Jewish custom by playing cards don't realize, at least according to this, and how authoritative this is, I don't know, but he's claiming is that they're only ironically following what the Germans would do when they would celebrate. Yes. It's a reasonable suggestion, but we'll leave Hanukkah for now. Hanukkah's over. We'll leave it for next year.
What do you mean by Nitzel night? Do you mean Erev Christmas or Motzi? The night before? I mean, it's Christmas Eve. It says Christmas night. It says Christmas Eve.
I was speaking to an Israeli musician this week, fairly famous one, religious musician. And I was talking to him about the phenomenon of the Karlbach minions. Now, I don't know if you like them or you don't like them. I think that they're very, very good. I think that they get people excited. They get people davening. There's one thing that they don't do, and they can't do, and that is get people to daven with kavana, for a very simple reason, and that is that the music is not in sync with the words. It breaks up the sentences in a way that if you're singing the Kalbach tunes, you can't be davening with Kavanah. Now, nobody get upset with me. Now you can protest. Say, that's it. I'm not coming back for 3 weeks. But again, anybody who's very attuned to the words that they're saying and is attuned to the music will realize that they're wonderful tunes and they get people happy and they get people dancing and they get people singing. But the only problem is that it can't be that you're singing with the proper kavanah of the words because it doesn't fit in properly. Don't argue with me. Don't argue with me. Don't argue with me on this. That what's the matter of opinion? If it fits in with the words,
no. What the words exactly mean to you? What the words mean to you?
But it stops in the middle of the sentence.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody does the same kalavach too.
Agreed. But I'm saying, I agreed. But I'm saying the problem is that I'll be more careful so that I don't step on your toes. That a number of the tunes break up the sentences in a way which goes against what the sentences are supposed to mean. Right. Okay, anyway.
Like, it bothers me.
Right, good. I said, I'm not debating this. But I spoke to this Israeli musician. I'm getting back to your, is it the night or not? And I said, Legabe hatfilah, bilel shishi. So he goes, ma? And my wife is next to me, and she says, Israelis never call it lel shishi. It's lel shabbat. Right. Exactly. Again, sometimes just translate from the English. Right? Friday night, you'd say Leil Shishi. No, Friday night is Leil Shabbat. So anyway, Nittel Nacht is Christmas Eve. And I told him, he agreed with me instantly, by the way. I don't want to tell you who it is. And I told him that I charge him with responsibility of creating exciting tunes that will move people, that will help Kavana as well. That could be used. Anyway, if he does succeed in doing this, I will take full credit. Anyway. No. He can have the royalties. Okay. So, Nittel Nacht means Christmas Eve. And let's look again for lack of any other place. We'll start with the Chatam Sofer. Chatam Sofer knows about a custom that not only are Jews playing with cards on Christmas Eve, they're doing more than this. This is written Kaf Chet Tevet Tav Kuf Nun Zayin. He writes, Al Davar Shenish Alti Me'et Ma'alato, regarding the question that you asked, Harama, great, whatever, Ma'inyan Minhag Isur Talmud Torah Bilel Chagam. What is the source that we don't study Torah on the evening of their holiday? So now you hear that the Chatam Sofer is telling you that he's asked a question. There is a custom, which is about during his time, that people are not studying Torah on Christmas Eve. By the way, this I can tell you is still practiced. Most of the people who practice it are Hasidim, and they still practice it today. And that goes back to my point, the statement that you looked at me when I said that they're still that Orthodox Jews are commemorating Christmas. By the way, they have a little bit of a problem. They have a little bit of a problem. What's the problem? The 24th at night. They have a little bit of a problem. What's the problem? Friday. Okay, this year, yes. This year, it's even more intriguing because it's Friday night. By the way, that's not the only thing that they abstained from, as I'll get to in a moment. But part of the problem is, what exactly is the 24th of December at night? What's the significance of it? Now, some of you may know that the general world follows what's called the Gregorian calendar. And what is the Gregorian calendar? It's the calendar as was changed by a pope, Gregory, who added in 10 days. He added or took away? He added 10 days to the calendar. And that's the reason why you have certain people having, let's say the Greek Orthodox, for example. There's a Greek Orthodox, right? They have which day?
6th of January.
The 6th of January. So now for, is it the 5th at night leading into the 6th, or is it? I even found certain Hasidic leaders who say not to learn Torah on both nights. Actually, there's a lot of Jews who are careful not to learn Torah any night, just to be, because you can never be too careful. You can never be too careful on these things. Current practice in Israel. Okay, I'll say it again. Current practice in Israel is that if you look at the religious community, right? Sephardim have never heard of this. Although, then, if I really be cynical, then it's another 10 years they'll find, then they'll adopt it and say this was our custom all along. As far as I know, the religious Zionist community, this is not something which is kept religiously. Among the quote-unquote black hat, what they would call the Lithuanian community, this is something which is not being kept. But among the Hasidic community, absolutely. To the extent that what exactly do they do? Now, so one thing is playing cards. There is some kind of Hasidic, I don't even know what the source for it is, but all I can say is that this is somewhat amusing, that you can't study Torah that day, which we don't know why yet, and we don't know if that's authentic or not. So what do you do? So they say, and that night, they tear all the toilet paper for Shabbos all year. Which then creates an incredible problem on Shabbos. But I'm waiting for someone to say that this is pikuach nefesh, and this is more important, and therefore you should rip the toilet paper. And I'm sorry if I'm being cynical, but if anybody is really interested in this topic, I can send you a 35-page article on this by Professor Mark Shapiro, who will tell you everything that you want and many things you did not want to know about. The topic is Torah study on Christmas Eve. And along the way, he has in a footnote quoting a newspaper in Israel saying that the stores did not understand why, but there was a run on toilet paper the day or two before Christmas, right? And they don't know what happened, why all the toilet paper was taken off the shelves in Jerusalem and Bnei Brak. So whether this is real anecdotal evidence of the custom. Whether this is apocryphal or whether this is anecdotal evidence of the actual custom, as I told you, anything you wanted and many things you did not want to know can be found in this article. That at least made its way only to a footnote. Yes.
When did it start, this custom of not learning?
That is a very good question. That's. Is that what I said? Yes, that's what I said. I said that there are Orthodox Jews who commemorate Christmas Eve. Were those my words? Okay, those are my words. First evidence that you have is Tom Sofer. What does he tell us? This is not the oldest evidence. This is just the first one we're quoting. What does he tell us? He says that somebody asks him, why is it that there's a custom not to study Torah? And he writes, Lo shamati tam mekubal bazeh. I never heard a good reason. Okay, so right there you have a bit of honesty from the Chatam Sofer. He says, "I know that there's this custom. He goes, beats me why people would do such things." And then he writes, "Gam shamati me Adoni Mori Virabi." Who is that? He actually learned by two people, the Chatam Sofer, but when he quotes his teacher without qualifying, it can only be one person, and that was Rav Natan Adler. Have you ever heard of him? He had a grandson who later became chief rabbi in England, Rabbi Nathan.
We have a family connection.
Okay. Rav Natan Adler was, he was a mystic. He was one of the few people in Europe who not only davened the Nusach of the Arizal, but he not davened in Nusach Sfarad. Sfaradit, he davened. Havarah Sfaradit. He had all kinds of Kabbalistic things for everything. The Chatam Sofer was his primary student, where the Chatam Sofer, again, I've mentioned this before, sometimes we forget this, because he became the standard flag bearer of Hungarian Jewry, but he's a good Yekka who was born in Frankfurt. And in Frankfurt, his teacher was this Rav Natan, who, again, I can say Natan, because he would have said Natan, Rav Natan Adler. And he followed him to Hungary, where Rav Natan Adler was appointed a rabbi. And the community found him to be very difficult, and he was very mysterious, but the Chatam Sofer was with him, and he would explain all the time what his mysterious rabbi means and says. Finally, they said, you know what, we don't need him. Why don't you become our rabbi? And Rav Natan Adler said, fine, you know, you become the rabbi, and he moved on, and that's how Chatam Sofer got his first job. Anyway, and that's how he stayed in Hungary afterwards, because he followed his teacher. Anyway, even though he holds this teacher of Natan Adler in incredible esteem, in this particular instance, he says, I just don't agree with him. He goes, now, it's not going to be clear along the way what he says, so let me say it first, and then you'll say it. Rav Natan Adler says that our not learning is an expression of mourning, that we are in mourning on that night. And therefore, we know that, say, on Tisha B'Av, we don't study Torah, because we are in mourning, so therefore this is also going to be a night of mourning. And he says, Gam Asher Shemati Midoni Mori V'Rabi, Ner Yair Lo Nihira, doesn't seem correct to me. Hagam Ki Yesh Sa'ayte Lezeh, even though you can support this, Mimin Haga Olam She'osrim Gam Tashmish V'Sogrim Sha'arei Tefillah. What else are they not allowing on Nitel Nacht? They closed the mikvahs, and they did not allow there to be any marital relations on that day. So that's the second thing which he's telling. Now he gave us two pieces of information. One is they're not studying Torah. Two is that not allowing net marital relations, which he says, on the face of it, this would tend to support the idea of saying that this is mourning, because when people are in mourning, that would also be the law. And he says, Ludati minak shtutu. And in my opinion, this is utter stupidity. And one should resist and one should protest against those who have this custom. So again, here we hear the custom. We hear it in a broader way than you even would have imagined. And you hear the Chatam Sofer saying he does not like this all that much. This is an addition. Between the two plus signs is in the printed edition of Chatam Sofer today, there's a note which was added by the publisher of books that are written after him. So this is not the Chatam Sofer writing it. So therefore, miluim means an additional note, and he says this is not like various other opinions. The lokam ashekatav achronim beneihim b'sefer Torah Yisrael al hilchat nida kuf tzadi zayin, where it says the im ira hatvila belal nitol lo nizdakek lo ba'ala bo tolayla, that we find in later books, and this is just one example. There are others as well who say that even if the woman's supposed to go to mikvah that night, she goes to mikvah, but she shouldn't be with her husband that night, which again may seem somewhat surprising to you. He says, "V'lo kein dat maran b'zeh." And what this note is saying, later books have ignored the Chatam Sofer on this, and the Chatam Sofer says this is a minag shtut, and one should not be paying attention to this, even though, of course, it makes it into later books. And I can absolutely assure you, it is in books written in the 20th century, and it's in books that have been written and published in the 21st century. Quote this custom as well. Okay? Let's continue. It's a good question. The ilu l'ta'am Adoni Mori v'Rebbe, kasha ma chiluk ben kodim chatzot l'lay la'achareha shenogin heter. He goes, this custom was only till midnight. So what's the difference between before midnight and after midnight? And then he goes on to say, and where do we find... Excuse me?
I'm joking. I said that because that's what's kind of qualified.
Okay. And it may be connected. And he says, what logic is there? Where do we find in Judaism where the night gets divided and that till, you know, midnight is not, cinder. Correct. Which he'll get back to now, because midnight mass may actually be quite significant in all this. I mean, midnight, Cinderella. Right? Okay. Aval hanira li, because it seems to me, efsher nahagu kadmonenu kein, it seems to be, and again, he identifies this as an earlier custom, mishum shaluli tin makom labal din lachlok, not to give opportunity for the other side to argue. Now, you're not sure what that means yet. Ula satan lekatreg, or for Satan to complain about the Jews. Why? On that night, kol ha'amim noadim bebeit Eloheihem michatzot ve'elach kiyadua, that they get up and they're going and they're doing their midnight mass. Va'am Hashem elu yishenim amitoteihem, meaning they're having their religious experiences, and the Jews are laying and sleeping in their beds. Afilu lomdei Torah rubam kicholam nu'arim tchilat halayla v'yishnim achar chatzot. He goes, most Jews, even those who learn at night, they go to sleep. You know, they're not up past midnight. V'lo ratzu l'gzor she'yakol Yisrael omdim ha'al hashachem mi'chatzot me'ha... Omdim hashkem mi'chatzot ve'elach b'oto ha'layla ki'ilu anu nigvarim achar kichukoteyim. They don't want to follow their rules, but he says, what he's getting to over here is that he thinks that if everyone goes to sleep earlier, then we can also get up and we could be learning at the same time in order that in heaven there won't be some kind of complaint against the Jews. Look at them, that they're involved in servicing God, as it were, and the Jews are laying in bed. Just one second, if there's anything else we want to see here. I did think he made reference to the cards as well. Yeah, the very last line he writes, "Umitoch hadvarim atalomed sheyesh l'g'or v'hakovim moshev leitzim smechim le'id." And he goes, from everything I've written, you certainly can draw the conclusion that those who have parties on that in this evening is certainly inappropriate, because then it really is commemorating their holiday, and so on. So the Chatam Sofer quotes the custom, doesn't like the custom, but it's what's interesting about the Chatam Sofer's the answer he rejects and the answer that he accepts, even though he says, I've never heard a good reason for this, right? So he makes one up. The reason that he's heard is that it's a time of mourning. He doesn't love it, because then why should it be different? Because he apparently knows that there's a difference before Chatzot and after Chatzot. And he says that he prefers to see this as some kind of theological battle which is taking place. It's inappropriate for Jews to be laying in their beds while the Christians are serving their god, or gods as it were. And therefore, and that's the reason that he gives. And along the way, he says, in Jews that are having parties, this is really not appropriate. Yeah.
Couldn't this all be after the fact, justification for the fact that it was dangerous for people to go out, so they didn't want Jews to be out of the base measure, or in the mitzvah?
Yes.
So maybe just keep everybody
home. Yes. Matter of fact, many have made that suggestion, that the simple reason is that it was dangerous. And because it was dangerous, therefore... if we didn't go out. The thing is, if that's the case...
But you can learn at home. At home, what's the difference?
Okay. So let's get to a couple of issues about this. One, if that's the case, then we should find a custom saying that the mikveh was locked. It doesn't say the mikveh was locked. On Tisha B'Av, by the way, the mikveh was locked. Right? It doesn't say the mikveh was closed. What did it say instead? That a woman who went to the mikveh shouldn't be with her husband. So that itself is a little strange, right? Yeah, it does say Sugum Shari Tefillah, even though I'll say it again, we don't find this. Again, maybe there was a custom like that. But on the most part, we don't find a law saying close the mikvah. What you do find is the emphasis is on the other. Also, it says, Ma shenog minog olum shosrim gam tashmish. So, if it's not Leil Tefillah, so then why are they paying attention to what's going on in people's bedrooms? Which means, why would that be relevant then? Which means... it's the tashmish generally which seems to be the problem. It could say, close the Bate Midrash and don't have public learning. So again, there have been those who have claimed, and maybe we'll see some of it along the way, there are those who have claimed that originally it was dangerous. And by the way, is that true or is it not true? Was it dangerous?
Yes, if they were drunk and
it was absolutely dangerous. There's no question about that. But it also depends where you lived, what the setup was, how close the Jewish community was to the non-Jewish community. But could there have been places that were dangerous? Yes. Were there pogroms that took place on Christmas? Yes. Would the priests whip up the crowd into a frenzy against the Jews?
Yes.
Absolutely. Again, all this is true. And this would be a very good reason for Jews to be home. It would be a very good reason for Jews to have their lights off and doors bolted and so on. Yes, all that is true. It's a wonderful suggestion. A number of books bring the suggestion. As far as I know, the first one to bring it was actually what we would call a maskil, a historian. He's the one who suggests it. And again, if I'm not mistaken, afterwards it makes its way into all kinds of books of Tamei and Minhagim, which means all that you need is a maskil to say it, then a rabbi to steal it, and then it makes it into the other books. If anybody does not want to read 35 pages and just wants to read 2 pages, Professor Rav Sperber, in his book Minhagei Yisrael, this is volume 3, he has over here Lel Nitul on page 93. It's only 93 till 95, and not even full 93 or full 95. So it's not all that great. He writes, Hachshash v'hasilida b'pnei kol ma'aseh shuchal p'resh ki'kibud hadat ha-notzrit o hatmadat l'nehogeim shal notrim heim shaholidu k'fi anireh et minhagei ha-nitl. That means he's saying that Jews have paid attention to the birth of the birth of the founders of Christianity. But by the way, at which point in history did Christians decide that Jesus was born on December 25th?
Later.
It's very late. It's very late. It's not an early. It's not a very early thing. So I'm saying that itself is interesting. And along the way, you'll find
New Year's is his point. So was that the original reason?
They didn't decide that he was born there until probably around 300 years after he died.
So how did they decide that January 1st was going to be January 1st?
It was a pagan holiday, which they co-opted, which was connected to the solstice. And by the way, before you get fooled with the solstice changes every 100 years. It moves along the calendar.
The first month used to be April.
I'll say it again, is that you have fairly late adoption of a pagan holiday having to do with the solstice, and this is not found at least for 300 years. And it wasn't universally accepted either, by the way. Christmas, if you want, I'm sure you can look up the internet, the origins of Christmas and so on, and you will see to what extent it was a pagan holiday and to what extent it still has pagan elements to it. And again, I'm obviously not going to defend it one way or the other, but I'm saying it's very interesting that Jews have given it so much attention. There are even those who've made the assumption that he died on that day, which is just, if you were to ask me, either they have some real inside information on this, or there's a slight confusion between birth and death, and a lot of this has to do with an assumption that he died on that day. And let's hold that for a second, and we'll come back to it. Yeah. Really? See, you obviously party more than I do.
No, it's just what I used to see in the newspapers the next day.
Yeah. Rabbi Soloveitchik once quoted, I forgot the name of the writer, who wrote an article about New Year's Eve. I think it was called New Year's Eve, such and such a day, where the fellow talked about what New Year's Eve would be like in the future. But he was writing really this existential piece, how on that New Year's day, there'll be people will be happy and people will be singing, people will be eating well. And so he goes, the only thing is that I won't be there, because he imagined New Year's Day after he's dead. He talked about this experience. And then he made this comment, or trying to experience something that you're not going to experience. Okay. Anyway, he then made this comment. He goes, I never had fond memories of New Year's Eve. I got beaten up by drunks in Germany on New Year's Eve. They were just looking for a Jew to be. And he went into a bit of a biographical statement. I don't remember if this made it into books. When my brother Yai was editing one of the writings going through it, there was this from the manuscripts. I don't know if this whole personal part about how he was beaten up on New Year's Eve actually made it into the final book or not, but it was interesting. I think he doesn't have fond memories of New Year's Eve, and I suspect many Jews over the years have not had fond memories. But you're right, New Year's Eve is also not a wonderful day. Professor Sperber does come to the conclusion in terms of the beatings. He brings a book, Uvetamei Minhagim. He writes, Tam leminhag shenimnaim milimud bilel shachal teveit, dahainu nitel, lefi shebiyamim harishonim hayut sorei hayehudim, orvim aleim umakim otam belaila hu, ana shematzu otam bachutz, Obrachov makot achzariot. They would beat Jews terribly. Sometimes Jews even died from this. Shamon chashvuzot lemitzvah. The Christian masses thought that this was a mitzvah. Ulachin gazru gedolei ador al milamdim v'al tamidim v'al bnei yeshivot shiyichabdu v'yeshvu b'vetein b'layla zeh v'lo yishotetu b'chutzot. That stay home, don't go running around the outside. From this, there are those then who claim, but they made, no, they said close the Beit Midrash. They didn't say stay home and don't learn. And from there was an extension. This, again, you could say the same thing with the mikveh. They said close the mikveh because it's dangerous for women to be walking around at night, but that doesn't mean not to have relations. So you would then have to claim that that's the origin, and then there was a complete misunderstanding along the way. As I said, one could make this claim if they want to. To look for a 20th or 21st century approach, turn to page 5. This is Rav Sternbach. Rav Sternbach is still alive and well, lives in Har Nof. When he was a little bit younger, and I believe it was for health reasons, but I'm not positive, he would travel and spend the winter in Israel, he would spend in South Africa. And he has many, many questions from the community from South Africa in his books. What's interesting about Sternbach is when he was younger, he wrote a book, Moedim Vizmanim, I think it's called, where he came up with every single imaginable chumrah about theoretical book, but it was like one of the strictest books you could imagine. And then when he wrote his books of Shelot V'Tshuvot, which is called Tshuvot V'Hanhagot, Answers and Behavior, I know people that like were afraid to pick it up. And the truth is that he's remarkably lenient in all kinds of issues, which I think is interesting. As a theoretician, he explores all kinds of things in theory. When it comes to practical halacha, he actually is not just reasonable, but more than that. And in terms of the quote-unquote Baal Tshuva community in South Africa, he apparently was one of the people that asked, and he has all kinds of interesting questions that were posed to him from people that were getting religious. And I've learned a couple of them with you over the years, including parents who wanted to drive on Shabbos to see their kids, and he was lenient on that, and many, many other things where other people were concerned about, where he was lenient. Over here, he writes, She'ela, Lel Nita Lumol Torah. Anshei Litakan, now, what can you tell us about the Jewish community in South Africa? Where are they from? Okay, the Jewish community. The Jewish community in South Africa is overwhelmingly from Lithuania, overwhelmingly Litvaks. It wasn't until at some point, Lubavitch got there. I don't know if there's any other Hasidic groups there, but it's very, very small, and even they have to behave because again, it's just like this overwhelming majority. But still, who's there? The community has always been, the community has always been this strong community with, again, strong Lithuanian roots to it. Okay? Anshei Litakan, lo shamu sha'asu lomod lel nitul. He says, I traveled here, and he goes, nobody here has ever heard of such a custom. It's unknown. But the Hasidim do know about this. And then again, this is a very accurate description of the situation today. Rak nechlaku b'zeh haminhagim. He goes, among the Hasidim, there's a difference of opinion. Yesh noagim b'lel nitul or la'isrim v'chamesh December, v'yesh noagim b'sheish li'anuar lel hatkufa. Ukfi hanitul b'yavanim, right? Milvad kishishanat hachamu muberet shoneh b'yom echad. V'tam elu anoagim kain sha'az mit'asvim yachad l'tuma. V'haklipot mitkabrim v'nidbakim la'osek b'ktusha. And at this point, I lost all of you. Because he went straight into a Kabbalistic interpretation. If you really want, there's a similar one on source number 3, the Shem Yishmuel. He talks about all of... He also, again, I won't go into it now, but he also goes into this idea of the klipot. He just now, looking for the reason for it, talks about klipot, tum'ah, things that are struggling, and so on and so forth. He's saying, not that far from what the Chatam Sofer said, but he's definitely clothing it in mystical terminology. He's saying that on that night, when there are Christians involved in what they're involved in it, there is a stronger existence of impurity in the world at that point. So let's try to read this again now. V'tam elu nogim ken sha'az mit'asvim yachad le'tu'uma v'haklipot mitgabrim v'nidakin la'osek b'ktusha. And therefore, if you're trying to do something holy, the bad vibes, if you will, can then attach themselves to the good, and therefore he's saying stay away from good, which, by the way, you can just tell me, what are you talking about? Do more good, and that will counter it. And this would be the Kabbalistic reason, which a lot of the Hasidim are adhering to, why they're not going to have relations, which they also will consider to be an act of holiness, and why they're not going to learn Torah, which they will consider an act of holiness. All these things need to be avoided because you're going to be giving... There are negative vibes out there which are going to somehow infiltrate into the holy things that are being done. Now, if that sounded... There's too much bad things going on there. Again, that's what he's saying. There's too much tum'ah, too much klipot, too much bad. And let's continue. Uv'medinotenu, v'chein ba'anglia, v'America, he writes, lo adukim ba'vodazara l'lechet pechatzot l'tum'ah kimikedem. He goes, the truth is that most non-Jews today don't go to Mass anymore. Midnight Mass has fallen into disuse, right? People give presents, people party, people do other things, but he's not worried about this theological battle as it once existed. Ulachain in kokach yisod la'asur b'dinot elu u'bifrat shagorim l'bitul Torah. So what's fascinating is he goes right into this Kabbalistic consideration, which is what the Hasidim would introduce, and he says, but even according to their considerations, this would not really apply over here. And he writes, they never had this custom in South Africa of not learning Torah. And he goes, and maybe even the custom originally was only for people who were very holy people who were sensitive of such things. So therefore, his ruling that he gives to the South African Jewish community, don't use this as an excuse not to learn Torah that night. Ignore it. Aval ikar hachumra. By the way, it's interesting he calls the thing a chumra, not to learn. I can again assure you that you can find Hasidic books that will not call it a chumra. They'll call it an iser, a prohibition of learning on that night. He writes, aval ikar hachumra nira bilel hatkufa dafka. Now he's trying to be more authentic and says, and I think that the real time is he just now paskened on the machloket. I don't know if they asked him, but he's paskened between December 25th and January 6th. And he says, I think that the real problem is, because the truth is that was the authentic Christmas, right? Or actually, it wasn't authentic Christmas at all, because Christmas went and took the old pagan holiday. The old pagan holiday was connected to the solstice. So historically, he happens to be right over here by saying that that's more authentic. And some say to have no relations, even if it's the night that she goes to mikvah, which was that footnote that was added to the Chatam Sofer. He goes, and he quotes a book that says, even those who are lenient, only lenient after midnight. And if there's no reason to be lenient, then one should be machmir after chatzot, which again is pretty remarkable for a custom which really has no basis. Again, the Hasidic sources are not talking about physical danger. The Hasidic sources are claiming something else completely. I'll explain what they're concerned with. Is that, first of all, let's make believe for a second that it's Jesus' yahrzeit on that day. I know that it's not, but that didn't stop the Bnei Yisachar from claiming that it was. He says, oh, he died on that day. So therefore, on someone's yahrzeit, what do? You learn Torah and you do mitzvot, you do things to do an Eloi Neshama. So what's the issue over here? They don't want to do anything which will cause an Eloi Neshama for him. Which again, I'll come back and say the same thing again. They are commemorating Christmas, but in really, in a most bizarre way. Which means the Hasidic community with that... I know. Don't worry. You raised a knowledgeable son. Don't worry. I'm saying. I did see one source that mentioned it. But again, in this whole, I don't want to say fantasy, this whole imagination ended up saying, okay, Christmas is this day which is holy to them, and therefore we have to be careful because there's all kinds of evil forces about, and we don't want to do anything which is holy, which can therefore somehow connect to their evil. Again, if this sounds bizarre to any of you, I can assure you that the Baal Shem Tov is quoted at least as being concerned with it, and I can assure you that all kinds of Hasidim afterwards were quite concerned with it, including coming down to this day and age. The problem will be this year because it's Lel Shabbat, so there are those who say, but the holiness of Shabbos will counteract, and there are those who say no. That still, you know, one should be careful about all kinds of things. No. Quite the opposite. They say that we have to be careful because there is these evil powers in the world, and that they come out on this day, and therefore we have to be very sensitive to it. Rav Ovadia, in source number 5 and page 3, he does a pretty good review, like he always does, of most of the sources. Nishalti, I was asked, Haim yesh mamash b'divrei ha'omrim she'ein l'mol Torah b'leil chag ha'molad shel chogegim bo ha'notzrim l'leidat oto ha'ish. I was asked, is there anything to this custom? So again, so here, source 5, page 3, here we have Rav Ovadia, Svaradi Tahor, being asked, what about this custom which people are hearing that one should be careful about? Lefi ani yedati, ein mamash b'divrei ha'omrim kein. So what does he start with? I don't give it very much credence. The ein l'divreim kol yisod klal. And anything that they're claiming about this has absolutely no basis. By the way, you already know where this is going. Umi olam lo nimne'u raboteinu v'gam anu ba'akvoteim milo motor b'laylahu u'kamosh regilim b'kol alelot shebashana. He goes, we have no custom of not learning. We treat this as every other night. D'lo ivri layla ela l'girsa. He quotes the Gemara and says, God created the night to study Torah. That's what the night is for. And he goes in a couple other Gemaras here talking about the importance of studying Torah at night and how you should never miss any night. You should learn every night and so on and so forth. Let's go to where it's underlined. Right before the underline, says, V'yesh harbe kehena v'kehena v'dvei chazal. There's many more statements we can quote like this, why it's important to learn every night. V'amnam shuv re'iti b'sefer tamei ha'minagim u'mikorei ha'dinim shevi b'shem l'kutei ha'pardei shatam shebemakom ahu nimne'im l'mod ba'oto ha'layla l'fi shahaya. And this, I already quoted this for you from Professor Sperber, Tzorereya Yudim Orvim Lahim V'kol Yudi Ha'Over Beruchov V'yu Makim Oto Makat Retzach V'Achzar Yud Rabah U'Lefamim Metu Tachat Yadam U'Lechen Gazru G'dol Ha'Dor Ala Melamdim V'Ala Talmidim V'Al Bnei Yeshivot Shichabdu V'Yashvu B'Vitehim B'Layla Hu V'Lo Yishotetu B'Chutzot Pen Yavoli De Sakana Ad Kan V'Nira Shemikan Yatza Lahim Ata'ut She'en Lamod B'Layla Hu. Now, first of all, what's fascinating about this is that he just went hook, line, and sinker for the approach of the maskilim. Okay, why is this so interesting? Do you get why this is so interesting? It's that here you have a Jewish custom, and the maskilim come and say, well, it's not really an authentic custom, it's really a mistake, it was based on something else, and it's not. And Rav Ovadia just follows them completely. Now, why is he following them completely? Because some Jewish source quoted it. Some religious source quoted it. Again, you can go back, and it's interesting to find ideas where they came from. Like for example, Lubavitcher Rebbe has a very famous letter asking about dinosaurs. So he explained, meaning if we believe the world's only 6,000 years, where do dinosaurs come from? So he said that God, there never were dinosaurs, but God planted dinosaur bones to confuse people, to test their faith. Now that's a very interesting thing. I mean, do I personally embrace that idea? No. But what can I tell you is that was written by a priest 100 years before Lubavitcher Rebbe. So he took, you know, again, completely took a defense which was given by the church, and he, and I want to say he koshered it. I mean, right. Again, it was a non-Jewish response. There were, by the way, very interesting Jewish responses to that question. including approaches that the world is not literally 6,000 years. There were other civilizations, there were other worlds, and all kinds of things. But he took the Christian approach, which again is pretty interesting. Over here, Rav Avadya takes an approach which is given by the Maskilim, which shows a historical reason why. Again, and it sounds really good, but as I said, and maybe even it's true, but it's quite interesting. Right, and therefore there's confusion because they were afraid.
That's for a future topic.
Excuse me?
Put that down for a future
topic. Which topic? Dinosaurs?
Dinosaurs.
They're extinct. What do we care? Do you know they once found up in Siberia a full woolly mammoth? It was under ice, and they found it, a full woolly mammoth. So you know what they did? You know what they did with it? They ate it. Yeah, they made a barbecue, and they ate it. They said, the Russians. No, they said, who will ever get a chance to eat this delicacy? So it didn't make it to a museum. It didn't make it to the Smithsonian. It didn't make it to, made it on somebody's plate with. So anyway, let's continue. He then quotes the Bnei Yisachar I told you about. The lo echad kishem hivi od tam b'shem regel yishara miharav hatzadik midinov. Again, that's the Bnei Yisachar. Shehum b'nei shenherag bo yeshu. Now you see black and white. You see the word kishenherag bo yeshu shehu klipat orev v'sha'omru magide emet she'ira kama pa'amim shelamdu b'layla hazeh. And those who know the truth know that some people did study on that night, and then a dog came to their home, which has all kinds of mystical significance. V'shemin hagisrael torahu v'hosif beharashem shagam hagon rav yonis and aifshitz amarazeh shemin hagisrael torahu ayin sham. So he brings, again, what was fascinating about this, and he doesn't even deal with it, is that he really, this regel yeshara, this book that he quotes, thinks that he actually died on that day, not born on that day, and therefore there's this whole thing about the klipot and learning for his merit and so on and so forth. Next, where it's underlined, for iti b'kovot ziag deal. Yeah. He's one of the great Hasidic masters, the Rav from Dinov. For iti b'kovot ziag deal Torah, b'tshuvat ha'admor mi Lubavitch. So now he's quoting Lubavitch Rebbe. Shekatav noah gim shalolam otor belela molad shel oto ha'ish v'nikva layla al pi aluach shel hanotzrim. We follow whatever they do, which means we don't care what reality is when he's born. Whatever they think he's born, that's what we follow. V'atam kidei shalolam shich chiyut diktusha boto ha'ish. We don't want to do anything for the merit of his spirit of that person, which again is somewhat strange. V'olchim b'shito atan, those who follow him now. And that's Lubavitcher Rebbe writing that in Sephardic countries it doesn't apply, so obviously Rav Avadya likes that. I don't know what Lubavitch does over here in Israel, if they learn or they don't learn, or they're careful about this. He also then writes that one should not do both nights, which means that's the question he's really dealing with. Do you do both nights, meaning January 5th and December 24th at night? And he says, no, one is enough. Then afterwards he quotes the Chatam Sofer, which you already know. And we need not go any further. There's one more thing which may be tangentially related to this and is also somewhat interesting. And that's the last source on page 4, source number 6. This is written in the Shulchan Aruch. Bishmona b'tevet nichtava ha-Torah yivanit b'yimei Talmi Yamelech v'yachol shecholom shlosh yamim b'tet bo lo noda ezehi atzara she'ira bo. And then he goes on other fast days. In this section of Shulchan Aruch, it lists all the fast days. What he told us here, and I cut out a little bit before then, is that there was a custom to fast on the 8th, the 9th, and the 10th of Tevet, which probably real convenient after all the sufganiyot that you ate and the latkes you ate on Hanukkah. So he says there was a custom on the 8th, the 9th, and the 10th. The 10th we fast, you all know why we fast on the 10th. The 8th, he says, why? because that's the day that the Torah was translated into Yevanit. The ninth, he says, we don't know. We don't know. Now, in the Slichot, it says that Ezra HaSofer died in that day. Now, that's very interesting, because Ezra lived long before the Shulchan Aruch, so why does the Shulchan Aruch not know what the Mishnah Berurah knows, or what the Slichot knows? Because you have a mysterious fast here. Right, correct. Correct. But over here, specifically, there was a fast not from the 5th, the 8th, the 9th, and the 10th. The 9th says we don't know why. Now, you could say because of the translation of the Torah into Greek, because it lasted for 3 days. So you already have the 10th, so you say 8th, 9th, and 10th. He says we don't know why. This we don't know why has left people to guess and rumors and all kinds of things. One of the reasons which is brought down is because that maybe that's Jesus' Hebrew birthday. And somebody actually went and did the math and tried to figure out, which again, the nicest way I can put this is that it's highly speculative. Okay, but I said there is that claim that look at this, it even made it into the Shulchan Aruch, which really would dovetail, I'm sure, if Nathan Adler would see that as support and say that, yeah, it's a day of mourning, it's a fast day, and that's why we're mourning his birth. Just to conclude, as far as I know, none of you keep this custom. As far as I know, none of your husband or children keep this custom. And if you're asking me my opinion, which you're not, then I think you wouldn't be surprised terribly if I were to tell you that I don't see any reason to keep this custom. And quite the opposite. I think it's highly ironic that there are Jews who are commemorating Christmas. I just find that so interesting, and I would prefer actually just to completely ignore and to forget about it, and I don't rip my toilet paper for the year beforehand, and you can buy tissues. This, I don't know if people knew about this, but there is in the Hasidic community this unbelievable fear of learning. It's told in the book Biography of the Stipler. Professor Shapiro also brings this in a footnote. You know, in a book of the Stipler, he was the Chazon Ish's brother-in-law. And Rav Yaakov Yisrael Kanevsky, Rav Chaim Kanevsky, his son, is one of the more prominent rabbis in Bnei Brak today. And it says that somebody was once learning with him, together learning, and he said to him, oh, do you not learn on Christmas Eve? And he goes, okay, let's learn what we'll learn without the books open. So he said, why? He goes, well, once I was learning and somebody came over to me, a chassid asked me a question and was very upset with me for learning, so I don't want to upset any chassidim. But he goes, but next year, don't tell me. Don't tell me it's Christmas Eve. Which, again, is really just his sensitivity. The Chazon Ish didn't care. I mean, he learned it, and many, many others. As I said, this is something which was adopted. The chassidim embraced this completely, this mystical side of it. I don't know of chassidim who didn't. I don't know of chassidim who did not. It's something which they claim goes back to the Baal Shem Tov. Now, one thing which was interesting with Professor Shapiro's article, and just incidentally, he's not the first, he's not the only one to do research on this. I mean, I have a host of other articles on this as well, which I didn't get to, including Professor Lyman, Sid Lyman, Schneer Lyman. Not only can you find an article that he wrote on this, about specifically, by the way, his starting point is the fast of the 9th of Tevet. That's his starting point into all of this. And he also has a lecture that you can find online, so you can save yourself the reading, and you can listen to it. I believe if you look at yu.com's audio site, you'll be able to find his article, his lecture. What was interesting, or for that matter, I think unique within Professor Shapiro's article, is that he spent the whole middle of it researching something which no one else brings up, and that is the literature of anti-Jewish literature, which means especially Jews who converted to Christianity, who told on the Jews what they were doing. Based on that literature, it's very clear that this custom predates the Baal Shem Tov. Right? Which means there are those who would claim, you know what, maybe this is just a Hasidic thing, and you're really working backwards. Sort of like we saw of Sternbach. Chassidim do it. In Lithuania, they never heard of it. So therefore, this must be a Hasidic, you know, thing. It's something maybe the Baal Shem Tov made it up. Says, let's not learn. As we saw, there's this whole historical argument. Maybe it's this idea of danger, which I'm not discounting. But if you look at the literature of the non-Jews, of the Jews who converted to Christianity, and the complaints that they had against Jews, or what they told about the Jews, one of the things that they told them is that the Jews won't learn Torah on Christmas Eve. And this was part of a debate that did take place. But you see very clearly, the fact that it's not written in normative Jewish writings, he claims, is not all that surprising, because certain things that we would do against Christianity, we may not want to put down to writing. But he makes it fairly convincing that this was a custom which predates the Baal Shem Tov and was an earlier custom. But what do we see very clearly? That in Lithuania, they really did not care about this all that much. Again, the argument that it was dangerous to walk outside is a real good argument. Does it necessarily answer all the details? I'm not sure. In the Hasidic writings, this thing takes a life of itself, the whole theology behind it, and sources of evil, and forces of evil, and strengthening evil, and trying to stay away from evil. And therefore, because of their war, the ongoing war between good and evil, so they still end up commemorating Christmas. Have a good Shabbos. The card playing was so that they're not learning to do something which was. But again, we saw the card playing goes all the way back to German custom. There's an argument among the Hasidim what you do. Some say Shabbos, some say.